Welcome into the Podium Game Podcast. I'm Brian Gibberman, joined by Posting and Toasting Seth Rosenthal. Seth, how you doing today?
Doing all right, how are you?
I'm good. Well, we booked this yesterday, and it ended up working out kind of well.
It's our fault, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, I think we can take the blame for everything that has came down today.
I'm all right with that.
Yeah, I'd rather blame myself than the Knicks. I think the Knicks get enough blame. Before we get to that, I tried to stop watching them. I lasted like a week and a half, and I feel like dirty. Like when they're on, and if I'm watching another game and I'm not watching them, I feel wrong about it.
I can see that. I wonder often how I would relate to the Knicks if I were not, you know, if I were not writing about them and if I were not invested in paying attention to them. I don't think I would ever stop being a fan, but like if I would just start to tune out games when I knew there was really nothing to play for. I've found pockets of enjoyment even in this stretch, though. I like watching them at least try to make progress and try out some sort of wrinkles and counters in the triangle, but you really have to search for it.
Yeah, it's tough. This year's, they're bad, and it's just weird because you don't know whether they're trying or not. I don't think they're intentionally tanking. I think they're trying to win games, which is sort of what worries me a little bit.
Well, who's that?
I think Derek Fisher is coaching to win, and that's completely concerning to me.
Listen, if Derek Fisher is coaching to win and nothing else right now, then I would be deeply concerned with the way they're playing. I mean, it's probably to some extent me projecting what I want and hope for the team onto what I'm seeing, but to me, the way he is treating his rotation, the way he's speaking to media after games and addressing the concerns that come up, read like textbook tanking to me. And I don't think tanking is one thing. It's not something you do 100% all the time and make every decision geared toward losing. It's something you have to be tactful and subtle about. And again, that may just be me projecting, but I see tanking. I see coaching decisions made not to lose, but to value instilling the system and testing the players more than to win games.
And that there, I do agree with you. The question is whether from all of this, he sees what works with this team and what doesn't. Like, is there any, the big thing with me is I worry about Melo and his long-term fit within the construct of this roster and how they see him, because it's not even the offense. I don't care about the offense with Melo when we talk about his positions when he's playing with one big man or two big men. I think the biggest problem is on the defensive end, and I wonder if they see that his biggest flaws defensively are very clearly hidden when he's guarding a bigger guy versus a wing.
Yeah, that's important. I don't feel like it's entirely fair to rate Derek Fisher's ability to appraise those things and manage them right now. I've tried to write about this before, but like a year from now or years from now, we will look back at all of the errors Derek Fisher is making right now and say, yes, some of that was actually characteristic of his coaching style. I like to think that a lot of this stuff will prove to be, sort of a necessary growing pain and just something that will one day prove to be not indicative of the way Fisher manages, but just indicative of the way the Knicks are treating the product they have right now. But you really, I mean, anything could go either way, and the Knicks really may believe that Melo's best at the three, and if they do, I think that will, well, depending on the roster they build, that could really be a problem long term.
And where I agree with you is I'm not sitting here going they should fire Derek Fisher or anything like
Some
that.
people are.
Yeah, that's crazy. Look, am I critical of the decisions he's making? Yes. Does that mean I don't think he can get better? No. I think in just like we saw with Jason Kidd last year and many coaches through the years, he's a guy who was playing last year. There's going to be along with such a bad roster. And then, plus, he's just getting adjusted to the job. There's going to be some growing pains, so you have to let him work through it. But I also think it's fair that you can be critical of the things he is doing.
Yes, agreed. And but again, I think there's a third thing wherein he does these things like he seems to avoid the hot hand sometimes. Like if a guy's playing really well, he sits him. He keeps mixing up the starting lineup. He keeps mixing up the closing lineup. And those are things to me that a coach would do if the coach was trying to sort of use his rotation as like a, I don't know. Like a,
It's an experiment.
yeah, it's a giant experiment. It's like a big centrifuge where he's just keeps shaking up the team, keeps letting them fall into different spots to see what sticks, to see who plays well. And so far, nobody has really stepped up to the challenge. Amari Stoudemire has been solid on offense. Other guys have had their stretches, but I think really, and I would imagine this comes down from Phil Jackson, is that the idea is to essentially mess with the players and see who responds well to it. And if none of them respond well, they can all go. And like you were getting at, Melo is really the one exception to everything. And you know, you want him to be okay with the triangle and you want to see him look comfortable with it, but it's tough to satisfy everything at once.
Yeah, and which brings us to today. And I appreciate you sending me pictures on Twitter of Karl Towns. It always makes me feel better. I need that at least once a day, please. My least favorite player on the team is trying to fight with Melo, which I fully approve of.
Because it'll get Hardaway out of New York faster.
Yes. So my two least favorite players on the team are Amari Stoudemire and Tim Hardaway Jr. I have to, number one, I have to give some sort of credit to Amari. He's been the best big on the team this year, which is both good and scary. But yeah, Timmy's picking a fight with Mel. I don't think that's the brightest move, young one.
Yeah, I mean, I think if whatever Broussard reported is accurate, and I'm not really questioning the overall vibe of the report, and that's totally sounds like that something could happen, something that could have happened, but one must consider who the source is and why source leaked. Anyway, if Melo and Hardaway did bicker in exactly that manner, I don't think it reflects particularly well on either of them. It also really doesn't sound like a huge deal to me. I think it's when guys are losing, they get really pissed off at each other. I think that's pretty natural. But yeah, if Melo has a problem with Tim Hardaway, that does not probably bode well for Tim Hardaway. Ideally, Melo's not the one making decisions anymore. But you gotta be able to jibe with like the only big contract on the team going forward. That's not a good look for the rookie who's been playing pretty poorly for his entire NBA career, to be sniping at his star.
Especially about shooting and
Yeah.
rebounding and defense. I mean, really,
Yes.
Timmy, come on now. I've been watching you for about 5 years now, and you've never played a lick of defense, and all that you want to do is shoot.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I wrote as much, but it really reminds me of like any Will Ferrell movie where it's just like completely delirious fools bickering over nonsense. But yeah, I just also don't think it's a huge deal. Is that fair?
No, it's guys fight in on basketball teams. I do agree with you. I think this stuff probably happens on basically every single team, and for whatever reason, someone. I was trying to think of this, like, what angle did who wanted this out there? And I was trying to come up with something, and I don't have the answer to that.
Yeah, I don't really have a good answer either. I have my suspicions, but
Well, so go ahead. What are your suspicions?
no, you know, it's not really productive or fair for me to guess.
I think it's very
You're snitching on
productive.
me, sorry.
I think it's very productive.
No, I'm not saying a word.
So you're gonna make me come up with something. Then
Yeah.
Isola also here. I think the more worrisome part about all these reports is, even though I am not a fan of the triangle, it's something that's here, and it's something that they mainly need to get used to. I do think Fisher needs to adjust a little bit, and maybe as they get better players, that just naturally happens. But yeah, I'm on record. I'm not the biggest fan of the triangle, and. But now Isola has a source that confirms that Anthony, along with a bunch of other players, are frustrated in the offense. And that's a bigger issue than Melo and Timmy sniping with each other.
Yes. Well, a few things. First of all, yes, if Melo is feeling genuinely down on the triangle, that would be pretty bad. He knew what he was getting into. He knew the way the Knicks were going to play. He should understand that the team is not really built to win right now, and it's, you know, the triangle is going would take time to learn anyway, but also just really isn't being manipulated by the best players right now. The other part of it is that there's a difference to me between being really down on the system and wanting to wishing, you know, that it could change and just being frustrated. It's frustrating to try to learn something that is difficult and new and to do it with literally 10 people who have no real stake in its future success.
And skills don't fit it.
And their skills don't fit it, and you know, they weren't brought in to run it. They inherited it, or it was foisted upon them. And so, like, of course that's frustrating. And so, you know, if Melo hates the triangle and wants to get rid of it, that's a massive problem. If Melo's frustrated because it's not working and it sucks to lose and it's, you know, time is working again, he just has to be patient and that's not fun, then I don't know. I understand that. And I wish that wouldn't leak because it doesn't reflect well, and you know, Melo knew what was going to happen getting into it, but that would, you know, frustration alarms me a lot less than genuine distaste for the triangle. And I'm not entirely sure which this is.
Do you like it so far? You keep pretty even keel and positive. I think you do. You're better at keeping even keel than I am. Do you like what you've seen from the offense so far?
Parts of it. The way I feel about the triangle, I've been trying to read as much as I can and to watch old tape and to see what has worked in the past. The triangle can incorporate any other offense. The triangle to me is more of a default way of doing things. You know, this is the way we bring the ball up the floor. This is the cut you make after you make an entry pass. These are just the general sets of behaviors that we will default to. It's more of that than it is a system. I tried to show last week how the Knicks can essentially work a motion offense into their system. You know, it's just you break one small rule of the triangle, and all of a sudden you have single double cuts, and you can play sort of like Spurs style baseline cutting basketball. I've tried to show before how they can work a pick and roll into it. I think the triangle, when the team has the right skill sets and really knows what it's doing and sort of has an instinct and feel for it, the triangle is as evident in its absence as it is in its presence, almost. Like it's, you know, it's the balloon that you blow up inside the paper mache and then remove, that you can do stuff around the triangle that doesn't necessarily follow the, you know, build the sideline triangle, first option, second option, third option, that works just as well. And then you can run motion and you can run pick and roll, and you have the triangle as a default. And you're using it as sort of the context with which to break certain rules. And that was an over elaborate explanation for me to say that basically the counters to the triangle and the wrinkles within the triangle are just as important as the basics. And the basics look awful when a team without the basic skills is trying to run them. And so it's hard to then move on to the, you know, to starting to break some of those rules. and make exceptions and learn how to counter when teams know exactly what you're doing. So, you know, if the triangle leads to just generating mid-range shots and completely avoiding the pick and roll and not playing the eventual roster's best skills, then I'm not going to like it. But I'm not really worried about Quincy Acey failing to succeed in the system or Sam D'Alembert failing to succeed in the system. I'm just looking to see that, you know, they're experimenting with it and trying to get the best out of it, but there's just only so much you can do with this roster in any offense.
It's weird. Like, they'll have the ball, and on the weak side, like, they'll three players will just, like, bunch up together. And they're running some stuff off it, but what it leads to is it leads the guy who has to end up in the corner either doesn't end up in the corner in time, or he's taking the shot like a foot in front, or he's taking it moving instead of being stationary, comfortable, ready to shoot. And those actions I find a little weird. And they'll even do it, like they'll have those three guys bunched together as they're running pick and roll and not spacing out the rest of the court. Some of that stuff I just find awkward, and I don't know if it's them doing it wrong or if that's what they're supposed to be doing, and I don't have the answer to that.
I don't have a good, you know, I'm not a triangle expert. You're talking to someone who's been paying attention to this stuff for 3 months. So my sense is, one, that they're often doing it wrong and they're just lazy, and two, that like any offense, you know, you're relying on spacing and you're relying on the threat of players being able to do certain things. And if guys on the floor can't shoot, then you don't need to guard them out on the perimeter. And if they can't pass from the high post, then you don't need to worry about that. And any offense, triangle included, relies on the defense having to worry about certain things. And if you have a bad lineup on the floor, then they don't have to worry about those things and they can, you know, close out without any fear of getting beat off the dribble. They can double mellow without any fear of anyone doing anything off the ball. And, you know, these kinds of problems would hamper any offense. And obviously the more complicated and trust and sort of cohesion heavy the offense you run, the worse you're going to look. And I think the Knicks would be winning more if they were just playing, you know, a simple spread pick and roll. But I do think the triangle may eventually, you know, prove to either not be good for the NBA anymore or just not be good for the Knicks. But I don't feel even close to drawing that conclusion based on what I've seen.
Do you think the offense they're running is going to limit their options in free agency? That there's only certain type. This is kind of, I did this on Twitter the other day and I was like, what big men would you want that would fit into the triangle? And there's really not many, because you need that second guy as a complement to Melo, who can also be the hub from running from the elbows that you give the post up touches to. You need another guy like that, whether it be a wing, a big. You need a second player that can kind of take some pressure off him. And like, you couldn't do it like Tyson Chandler, with what the Knicks did with Woodson. Tyson Chandler could be the second best player on the team, and that was right. Perfectly fine. Like, with what they're doing now, you can't. You need a guy that has a more vast skill set than someone like Tyson. I think that kind of makes this whole process a little harder, and that does worry me a little bit.
Yeah, that's fair. Actually, as a side note, the more I watch D'Alembert in this offense, I kind of wish we could have seen Chandler at least for a little bit. I actually think I was, you know, I'm still fine with that trade, and I think it was the right move for everyone, but I do wonder if the Knicks could have found interesting touches for him, because there's a lot of handing off and whatever. Anyway, the free agent class coming up doesn't look great. I have no faith that Marc Gasol will leave Memphis, especially not for the Knicks. He, you know, a healthy Marc Gasol would be pretty much perfect.
It's not happening, though.
I mean, it's not happening. But like, for him to be option A makes sense to me. I understand that it seems highly unlikely, but he should be a target. Guys like Robin Lopez are somewhat interesting. Omar Sheik's offense would be a problem, but, you know, if he's more of a defensive hub. For me, the draft is really what holds the most promise triangle-wise. You know, Jahlil Okafor really looks like the kind of guy who would fit. Karl Towns really looks like the guy who would fit. I don't know much about the other big men in the draft, but it seems like this lottery will be pretty deep with very talented big men of all different flavors. But that's part of the reason that I'm so excited about the prospect of a top lottery pick. It's not just because lottery picks are good, but because I think if the Knicks manage to get up near the very top of this draft, they could get not just a solid supporting player, but someone with the promise to be sort of a centerpiece in the triangle.
Yeah, this has been my angle with the offseason with where this team is that you get your big in the draft, and outside of an unrealistic, a Goran Dragic or a Marc Gasol, which is even a Robin Lopez, I don't see coming here. Yeah. Why would he? Go ahead.
No, I think go on. I think you're right.
Yeah, like I would love Lopez on this team, but I don't think he's leaving Portland to come to the Knicks unless they don't feel like shelling out the money for him. But you use this next offseason, you rebuild the depth. You sign a bunch of good value. Instead of signing one guy, you sign three or four good value guys that are strong rotation players. You be decent. You actually do what they were planning on doing this year, and you try and sneak into the playoffs, be halfway decent. And the year after, once you have you're more established with your roster, more comfortable in the offense, and people could see that, all right, they're a little bit closer to success, that they go along, and then you target whoever the bigger names are in 2016. I don't think Durant's a real option, but whatever other bigger players are available then, I think that might be a more realistic time when you could get your next guy to put next to Melo.
Yeah, that could be it. The other option really is to overpay this summer. I mean, if the Knicks focus in on someone that they really think is the great fit, they have the space that they can, you know, depending on whether a guy is restricted or not, they should be able to beat other people's offers. Whether or not their system is appealing, you know, money is also pretty good, and guys are willing to learn an offense they don't necessarily like or move to a team that just won 30 games or 20 games if you pay them enough. So that's an alternative. Is like, if it comes down to Gasol or anyone, you know, valuing comfort versus money, the Knicks will have money.
With how bare this roster is, it's almost hard for them to overpay someone, though. Like Marcus Wall, sure, give him whatever he wants.
Right.
He can have anything. But like those mid-level guys, like Shumpert's the perfect example. Shumpert's a decent player. He's an inconsistent player who has some talent and might eventually grow into something better. But if he wants $8 to $10 million with the way this roster is right now, I don't really think they're in a position to overpay someone like that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think the overpay would have to be someone who they deemed just as an obvious fit. And Shumpert, like you're saying, is not obviously a very good player for this system at this point.
So a big man's your top priority, right? That's the thing you think's most important for this team going forward?
Yeah, I do.
All right, what are your early impressions of Calderon from what you've seen so far?
My early impressions of Calderon are that, well, first of all, I think he probably, like Melo, is pretty frustrated with running this offense right now. I just think this can't be fun for him. I like how quickly he gets the ball up the floor. It's clear that he understands he already just has what appears to be a better sense for where guys should be, where he should be, where the shots are coming from than his teammates. He's an unbelievable skip passer with really good vision. You know, he can make passes that aren't obvious or wouldn't be obvious to other players. And he can obviously shoot. I don't think he's finding the best shots for himself just yet. And I think it's tough, again, because of just the way the floor is spaced and the way defenses can afford to react against the Knicks offense. I don't think, you know, Caldwell necessarily has the room to get his best shots. But I like what I've seen from him. I think he could be part of a good team defense, even though he's a pretty bad individual defender, just because he knows generally which way to send guys. He knows how he should be moving his feet, even if he can't necessarily do it. And so I would be fine with them, you know, if they really are going to lean hard on other positions and spending money elsewhere, I would be fine with him being the starting point guard of, you know, what aspires to be a very good triangle team. I also, if there are good trades out there, I wouldn't be too upset about looking to trade him.
Him and Pablo are pretty much the only two players on the team that have any sort of basketball IQ.
I don't know about that, but okay.
Who am I missing? That's like a really high-level, smart basketball player.
I think these are all relatively smart basketball players. I think those are the guys who clearly have the wherewithal to pick up the triangle very quickly.
I see, like, I watched Quincy Acey makes, like, at least one pass a game where I'm just like, what in the world are you doing? D'Alembert, I don't trust. He makes some good passes occasionally, but I don't trust him, and he gets lost. It seems like he gets lost all the time. I think that's part of the problem with this team, is they're not a overly smart basketball team.
That's fair. I'm not inclined to look at the way they're responding to this offense and make sweeping judgments of their intelligence.
Oh, but that I'm kind of going back to more than just this year. I mean, J.R. Smith is, I love the guy, but he's not the sharpest tool when it comes to basketball. He makes some really, really dumb decisions out there. Even Melo is lost at times when it comes to paying attention to the shot clock and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think this is all fair. I guess AC and D'Alembert, you know, the new guys are ones who are like, I don't really know. This is a weird situation for them. Guys who have been around before, I guess they're just, I mean, I think part of what I'm bristling is I just don't like the idea of basketball IQ. And yes, people are smarter than others, and yes, people respond to direction better than others. But I also, like, I can understand the tendency to just get lazy when things clearly aren't working and to get impulsive. And yeah, like, JR and Melo have career-long problems with doing that too often, but it's just a poor environment to be in, and I can't get that upset for someone not responding well to the situation they're in. This is just a bad year for everyone.
Do you still have full confidence in Phil going forward?
I don't know that I ever had full confidence in Phil going forward.
Oh, okay. Fair.
But I have full confidence so far that there is a plan and they're following the plan, which is all I want. I don't know if the triangle is going to work. I don't know if Phil Jackson's a good GM. But I see what the Knicks are doing. I think I see what the Knicks are doing. And, you know, they've continued to do it despite problems so far. And I think they will continue to do it. And that's all I want. I just want them to see something through to its end.
Isola doesn't seem to think it's going to make it to its end.
Then that's entirely possible. Nothing in the Knicks organization really has since I've been alive. The Knicks have made a systemic habit. James Dolan has made a systemic habit of getting impatient with stuff when it's not working. And then also not understanding when you need to just let something die instead of trying to patch it up on the fly. And my hope is that Phil Jackson, you know, having control means that they're not gonna rush to fix stuff that's wrong with this year's team. They're not gonna make, you know, investments for the short term, and that Derek Fisher will have time. You know, we will really get to see whether or not he's a good coach and not freak out you know, if he struggles even next year. I don't know if that's the case, but I just want to see the Knicks have a plan and stick to it. I don't know if this is the one, but it's something.
What you just hit on was, it was, while the loser's mentality thing was kind of the headline that everyone went to from when Phil talked, I think it was two days ago, might have been three, but what you just said, him talking about his thought process with trades, I thought was the most important thing that came out of it, and I 100% agreed with what he said.
Right, that they're, you know, they will look to trade, but there's no pressure to solve problems for this season. You know, I essentially look at any trade as either they're going to trade for an asset or nothing, you know, like a pick or just space, or they will trade for what is essentially a free agent signing. They'll trade for someone that they want 3 years from now, you know, that they really want to build around. So I just hope they stick to that.
We'll finish off with this. Oh, wait, I have one other question.
Yep.
If they think Melo is solely a three and not a four, do you think they would be better off moving him?
Well, I think the three and the four and the triangle are fudged enough that, or really in any NBA system, are fudged enough that that could just influence who they pursue in free agency. You know, if they don't want him, I don't really buy this logic, but if they don't want him banging with big men, then I don't know, maybe you're interested in you know, someone in the draft who's more of a 3-4 guy who can defend either position and play either position. Maybe Paul Millsap is someone you go after in free agency, or Draymond Green, someone who can allow Melo to play the quote-unquote 3, if you want to call it that, but can also spread the floor.
I think Green would be, after Gasol's, probably would be my top target, because yeah, then you can, because he can guard wings. My thing, right. I said earlier, it's all about the defensive side of the ball with me, and not the offense. I don't think him and Millsap would work.
Yeah, maybe not, but or maybe not defensively, but yeah, I guess defense is what matters most. I am thinking offensively, as is my want, but offensively, I don't think it matters that much, as long as I think you need three guys who can shoot. And if one of them is tall, fine, that's okay.
Yeah, and give Melo the – because Melo's not Kobe. He's not Jordan. His skill set is different. He still does the post-up stuff, but he's also a much better catch-and-shoot guy from three-point range. And that's something they need to find a way to accentuate within the offense. So having him have the ball in his hands all the time takes away from that. They need to have guys – like they use with Woodson, they use the Felton Tyson pick and roll as a vehicle to do that. So now it's a different offense, but they need to find a different vehicle to be able to get that out of him now.
Yeah, I fully agree.
Anything you guys have coming up on SB Nation or the Knicks posting and toasting that you want out there?
No, nothing off the top of my head. I hope that everyone looks at those things, but otherwise, no, just the usual.
All right, I'll plug it for you. They wrote some stuff about the Knicks stuff today. That happened that we talked about earlier, about all the dysfunction and what other stuff. Postingandtoasting.com. Go there and read it. Since Seth was going to be shy and didn't want to do it, I'll do it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. No, yeah, thank you. Please read my blog.
Yeah, he does a good job, and he does a good job on the SB Nation site. Sight, as I can't speak. All right, Seth, thank you. Always appreciate it.
Thank you, Ryan.
That wraps up the another edition of the Podium Gate Podcast.